This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Just a couple of months before rap star Tupac Shakur was shot and killed, he completed a movie comedy called Gridlocked. My guest is the writer and director of the film, Vondi Curtis Hall. You may know him as Chicago Hope's Dr. Dennis Hancock. He also co-starred in the films Romeo and Juliet, Broken Arrow, Drop Squad, The Mambo Kings, Coming to America, and Passion Fish. Gridlocked stars Tupac Shakur and Tim Roth as two musicians who are trying to kick their heroin habits. They want to get into rehab, but time after time they're shut out by the bureaucratic application process. To make matters worse, two drug dealers are out to get them. When Tim Roth's character is wounded in a shootout, it gives Tupac Shakur an idea.
Stab me.
Get the f*** out of here. I ain't gonna f***ing stab you.
Look, if we're in the emergency room, we're off the f***ing streets. Once we get in the hospital, we can kick, Stretch. What the hell are you tripping off? I'm the one that's gonna be cut. Besides, it's a pocket knife.
I don't feel comfortable with that.
Come on, Stretch. We can't be out here all night. You're bleeding all over the place. You gotta go anyway.
Where?
Where what?
Where you want me to stab you?
Oh, what do you think is best?
Well, if I stab you in the stomach, I might hit some organs and shit.
Yeah, you're right. Not the stomach.
What about the arm?
Nah, it's too wimpy.
Well, if you turn around, I can stab you in the back.
Nah, you're f***ing paralyzing. Not the back. Okay. My liver's on the left. Stomach's on the... No, my liver's on the left. My kidney's back here, and my stomach's on the right. And my stomach's on the... Or is it my kidney's on the left?
I think the stomach's the left.
Well, I know my lungs are right here, and I definitely don't want to punch your lung.
What about if I stab you between the organs? You know, like maybe between where the stomach and the kidneys meet.
Tupac Shakur has been getting rave reviews for portraying a vulnerability, warmth, and wit that weren't apparent in his gangster rap persona. Director Vondi Curtis Hall didn't initially like the idea of casting Shakur, but Shakur wanted the role badly to prove himself as an actor, and eventually he won over Curtis Hall. It was a hard sell because Shakur had just gotten out of prison.
Yeah, yeah. And at that point, no one from Hollywood wanted to really touch him because it was, you know, sort of... He was sort of he was a leper in Hollywood for that brief moment when he gotten out, and we were in business with Def Pictures at that point. And that's a company that's owned by Russell Simmons and Stan Lathan, and Preston Holmes, who's the president of Def Pictures, had known Tupac since he was a kid. He was a good friend of his mother's, and had literally watched him grow up. And he came to me and said, you know, nobody in Hollywood wants to be in business with Tupac, but I'll be happy to be in business with Tupac because I know him. I've known him his entire life. And the Tupac I know is different than the Tupac that the image is out in the world. And I think he'll do a good job in this movie.
Did anything that happened during the filming of Gridlock make you think that he was heading for trouble?
No. In fact, had always talked about, you know, changing his image, and he was writing a novel, had written a screenplay, was directing directing his own music videos, was, to my eye, really making things happen. And moving in a positive direction.
I think in a way your film, particularly because of Tupac's presence in it, bridges like the gangster world, you know, the rap gangster world, and the art house action film world. And when I say art house action film, I mean the kind of films Tim Roth has been in before being in your film, like Pulp Fiction, Reservoir Dogs. What do you think? Is this a conscious thing on your part?
No, it wasn't. The movie I really wanted to make was Midnight Cowboy for the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
I really saw the bond between the two characters sort of analogous to, you know, the Dustin Hoffman character and the John Voight character in terms of the love they had for each other, and real, and the need for the support of each other in order for them to ultimately achieve their goals. The script is semi-autobiographical, and it was really sort of the dynamic that I had with my friend when I went on the same journey.
This story in Gridlock is about two performers who decide to give up heroin, and they try to get into rehab, but they just can't get past the bureaucracy. They just can't get into rehab. What led to this angle? You've said that you did drugs when you were a teenager. Did you try to get into rehab and have a lot of trouble getting in?
Yeah, I did, actually. My best friend and I were musicians. Well, I grew up a musician and playing in a band, and I'm from Detroit, and Detroit's a very, very sort of musically competitive town. And we were all doing drugs because we thought it was the way to play faster, write better songs. And then one day my best friend and I, who was the bass player, said, you know, maybe we could play better and write better songs if we weren't stoned all the time. So the next day we went to get into rehab. Well, I was living with my parents at the time. And my best friend didn't have a Social Security card, and he was living with his parents as well. So when we went to get in rehab, I didn't want to give my address because I didn't want my parents to know that I was using drugs. And he didn't either. So we were, like, going from place to place trying to get into rehab without any of the proper tools. So that was sort of the genesis for the idea. It was, you know, how do you engage the system without the proper tools, i.e. Medicaid card, Social Security card, address, what have you.
Did that hold you back from giving up drugs?
No. Ultimately, we ended up buying methadone from people who were in a program who would hold on to the meth, to the methadone, and sell it, and then go and get high.
Great. So instead of dealing with drug dealers, you had to deal with methadone dealers.
Exactly.
How did you start doing drugs?
It was really sort of, well, actually the speech in the movie talks about the first time I did smack, but at that time we were doing everything. We were doing LSD and mushrooms and crystal meth and THC and anything to sort of what we were all sort of seeking some sort of catharsis or something, some sort of mind expanding, you know, epiphany that we was we could somehow write the one brilliant song that would go down in history. Yeah, so it was the music scene in Detroit.
The characters in the movie decide to quit as a New Year's resolution, and also because someone very close to them has overdosed. What was your turning point?
One day, just realizing the music that I was playing was really bad, and you know, the virtuosity that I was seeking I was never going to get to. I think it was a series of events, but you know, one day, just said, you know, this is not happening. Yeah, it was, you know. Thing about doing drugs, it's fun until it's not fun, and or it's fun until it turns into a job. I think there's one of the characters mentions, you know, getting high is supposed to be fun. When getting high turns into a job, what's the point?
Now I'm going to ask you to describe the character you play in Gridlocked.
I played the Reaper, and the Reaper is sort of to my mind, a sort of three-tiered character. On the surface level, he's the bad guy, the proverbial bad guy. On another level, he's sort of the Grim Reaper, who is sort of death, sort of stalking these guys and popping up sort of everywhere they go, unexpectedly, unexplained. And on the third level, he's just sort of a comic, sort of homage to the 70s, sort of Superfly, the Mac, sort of, you know, bad guy in a shiny suit.
So describe how you dressed yourself for this role.
In black, and a black hat and a black shiny sort of satin suit with a black shirt and a black tie and a pair of black and gray sort of wing-tipped pointed alligator-like outrageous shoes and, you know, big, nice gold watch and a gold ring and, you know.
Do you have a taste for any of this in real life?
No.
Did you really like the Superfly era movies?
I did. Those are, you know, I was coming up and those were a big influence on me. I just, you know, those were great movies. I mean, they weren't great movies, but they certainly were a big impact on me. The movies that, you know, movies for me have always been sort of denoted periods of time in my life. So my favorite movies, you know, if someone asked me my top 10 movies, they would be not the greatest movies ever made, but really would be some of the greatest times ever had.
Such as?
Superfly, Harold and Maude, Putney Swope,
And what were the times in your lives that they went along with that were so memorable?
Just Putney Swope sort of sparking an awareness for me. Just this sort of reversal with the black guys in control. I'd never seen that. And that was a time when I was really sort of, you know, a young, angry black kid, you know. Harold and Maude was sort of spoke to a time when I was playing guitar and into Cat Stevens, and
uh-oh.
I just thought it was the great movie, and you know Cat Stevens did the score, and you know, so you know it's thing that's you know, I always remember like going to or Psycho when I was on my first dates with with a girlfriend that I loved, you know, seeing it in like a rerun in like a dollar theater or something. So they're all The Godfather and finally She's Gotta Have It, which really sort of, you know, sort of the inspiration for me to become a filmmaker.
Mm-hmm.
It came at a time when I was really looking for something else. And it was sort of, you know, the beginning of the new black wave in cinema and sort of, filled and sort of after that big void, after the black exploitation films of the 70s. So those are some of my favorites.
You described yourself as having been a young, angry black kid. Did you politicize any of your anger?
I didn't really, no. I didn't really. I think I was, I just shouted a lot and sat around tables.
Drank a lot of coffee and beer.
Drank a lot of coffee and talked a lot of crap. I didn't actually do anything, you know. It's one of those guys.
My guest is Vondi Curtis Hall. He wrote and directed the new film Gridlocked. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back with Vondi Curtis Hall. He plays Dr. Dennis Hancock in Chicago Hope, and he wrote and directed the new film Gridlocked. Now, I think a big breakthrough role for you was when you got cast on ER as a suicidal transsexual. And then shortly thereafter, you showed up in Chicago Hope in a major and recurring role. Isn't there some kind of law against being on both of those shows?
Yeah, really. So it's an unspoken, unwritten law. when I did ER... Well, I should say when I got Chicago Hope, they didn't know that I'd done ER.
And you didn't tell them.
And I didn't tell them. Because at that point, Chicago Hope was getting hammered by ER. So I didn't tell them. And the show hadn't aired. And they offered me the role. And I said, okay, great. And then the show aired a bit later. And they said, you didn't tell us you did ER. I said, hey, don't worry about it. No one will ever recognize me as Dr. Hancock from ER. So.
And you enjoy doing TV?
Yeah, I like it. I like it. It's really helped in a lot of ways. The exposure, I think, really allowed me to get the opportunity to do Gridlocked.
Mm-hmm. Because you're a name now.
Yeah. Yeah, it really helped.
I want to get back to Gridlock for a second. The two main characters in it are two musician friends who are trying to get off heroin, trying to get into rehab. Tim Roth, Tupac Shakur are the leads. When you were writing the movie, did you see the leads as being played by a white and an African American actor? Was that part of the initial vision?
Yeah, from the very beginning, because my best friend and I, who sort of went around together, my best friend was white, and you know, I was sort of the solid, stable, quote unquote, sort of stable ones, and he was, you know, the crazy, insane white boy. So I wanted to bring that same dynamic to the movie.
What was crazy about him?
Oh, I was always dragging him out of a bar or something. And he was always saying the wrong thing or screaming at someone. Let's just say his id was a little... Super ego didn't control his id as well.
Are you still in touch with this friend?
No, this friend actually died.
Oh, sorry to hear
actually
that.
Actually died. Actually OD'd.
Really?
Actually OD'd on his way to California. To join a clinic. Well, to join actually wasn't a clinic. It was actually a program where you pick grapes or oranges or what have you in Northern California and sort of live communally and change your environment and breathe fresh air and, you know, sort of get off drugs. And he actually died, was found in Salt Lake City.
When was this?
Oh, this was in 1980. 79, 80.
Were you shocked to find that out?
Yeah, I was. And, you know, when I think about it in retrospect, I'm just happy to be here talking to you. Because I definitely, didn't have to be.
Did you talk about drugs a lot with Tupac when you were making the movie?
Not really. Tupac didn't really do drugs. He was really not into it. Had never done... shot up or anything like that. So let me say that again. Actually, I did talk to him about him, but it was trying to give him a sort of how to of mm-hmm. Of doing because some of the scenes they had to shoot up and some of the scenes they had to cook the dope and they had to pretend to be shooting up and they had to go through the process of preparation. So. Yeah, I spoke to him a bit about it.
Mm-hmm. When you decided you wanted to direct a film, mm-hmm. how did you know you have it in you? I mean, you know, it's really hard when you haven't done something and you want to do it to know for sure if you can actually do it.
Yeah. I went to film schools. I had gone to like three of them. What I didn't know was when I was going to be good at it, but I knew I had the burning desire. So I tried to study as much as I could. I went to the New School here in New York, and when I moved to L.A., I went to UCLA's certificate program for directing, and then I went to AFI in the screenwriting program and wrote the script. When I wrote the script, I always... I wrote it really... For me, the script was really a shot list with dialogue. So I really envisioned every frame of this movie. Then, after writing a very specific script, I tried to get actors who I really admired and who I thought would serve the movie. And finally, the day came when I had to stand on set and do it. Well, I didn't know that I could really do it. I knew that I convinced a bunch of people that I could and that I had written a script that, sort of indicated that I could. Then I storyboarded everything and finally stepped on the set. But the night before shooting, I'll never forget, I was up all night the night before the very first day of shooting, I was up all night, and I'll never forget it because I was trying to figure out the first shot. And I had a few options. And I finally dozed off at about 5 in the morning, or maybe 4:30, and the call was 6 o'clock, having finally figured out what I was going to shoot. Well, I got on set and you got 150 people there waiting. It's the very first shot. The studio's there. All the actors are there. The crew's there. Everybody's kind of standing there. Here's the director. Okay, what's the first shot going to be? Well, I changed my mind. I couldn't figure it out. So I sort of stood there and I said, well, let's do this. We're going to shoot the shot this way. And then I thought about it and said, you know, that doesn't work. We're going to shoot it a different way. And then I thought about that and said, you know, that doesn't work either. We're going to shoot it a third way. So I changed my mind about three times in the first, you know, 20 minutes of shooting. So, you know, I had this sinking feeling that this is going to be a long shoot. So, you know, I hedged my bets, but, you know, you never know whether or not you can do it. You never know until you're just standing there. And then I think I acted like a director or something. You just never know.
You happy with the first shot?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's very interesting. That first shot's not in the movie.
Oh.
That's the one.
Well, you were unsure of it. And...
Yeah, I was unsure of it. It's not in the movie. And that's the only thing that I cut. It's this one walk and talk scene. Mm-hmm. It's the only thing that's not in the movie. And it slowed it down, so I didn't use it.
Well, I really want to thank you a lot for talking with us.
Yeah.
And I wish you good luck with the new movie.
Thanks a lot.
Vondi Curtis Hall wrote and directed the new film Gridlocked. He plays Dr. Dennis Hancock in Chicago Hope. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.